Welcome, welcome, welcome to the Three Down Nation podcast. I'm Justin Dunk, joined by John Hodge and JC Abbott. Hodge, despite your best efforts in lowering your salary way down the scale, you were not selected as the new CFL commissioner. Are you okay with this?
No, I'm devastated. This was terrible. They didn't even call me. That's what we call a slap in the face, boys. That's a slap in the face. This disappointment, it's going to take me, dare I say, minutes to get over. Minutes!
After such a competitive offer, too. Like, imagine the savings they could have had if they hired John Hodge as commissioner.
I don't know what Stuart Johnson's going to make in this role, but I'll tell you one thing right now. There is no way that he's doing it for less money than I would have been willing to do it for.
That's factually correct. I think, though, your resume is a little bit different than Mr. Johnston's.
I appreciate you using the word different and not way, way, way worse. So thank you for being diplomatic with my feelings. Unlike the CFL, who have broken my very fragile, cold Manitoban heart.
Let's try to get you to put the pieces back together for the pod, boys. Here we go. Today, we're discussing Mark Waitman stepping down as Montreal Alouettes president.
The BC Lions losing two draft picks after going way over the salary cap.
A Saskatchewan-born CFL draft prospect not being a Riders fan?
The Riders being in contact with Canadian receiver Chase Claypool.
And Logan Ferland becoming one of the CFL's highest paid non-quarterbacks. But first,
the CFL has named a new commissioner in Stuart Johnston, who has spent the last 28 years at TSN, including a 15-year run as the network's president. The Toronto native and Queen's University graduate takes over the role on April 24. Meanwhile, Rogers has struck a new 12-year broadcast agreement with the NHL for $11 billion Canadian, tying the two together through 2038. The CFL's television rights up for grabs after the 2026 season. What does Johnston's hiring and this new hockey deal mean for the league?
I think it shows, fellas, that the league is likely, and I stress likely, based on analysis and informed speculation, headed for a re-up with TSN for multiple reasons. And full credit to our guy, John Hodge. He's not the commissioner, but he does excellent work at 3downnation.com, penned an opinion column that laid out everything surrounding this new Rogers NHL landmark deal. And I'll touch on Johnston first, because I think it's a really intriguing hire. A lot of people are going to want to put out a bunch of hot takes, but let's judge him on what he does and how he portrays the league's vision in his inaugural press conference. And going forward, that to me is going to be a real key. From what I've been told, I believe that first press conference for Johnston should be sometime in April, mid to late April seems to be an ideal timeline for the league. And if you look at his background, this hire makes a lot of sense for a lot of reasons, but it's different when you move over from TSN to a role as a league commissioner. And let's see how he does. Now, for the Rogers NHL deal and how it potentially affects the CFL and TSN, you know, I think that deal, if anything else, showed the potential for TSN, and I don't want to say have to, but to pony up perhaps more dollars, you know, just to stay competitive in the summer, because that Rogers NHL deal is more than double what the previous deal was when Rogers took hockey away from TSN in 2013. So I think it shows that there is still an appetite in this country for Canadian sports and for that to come from a national broadcaster. And guys, on the other side of this, you know, there's a lot of chatter about Amazon and Apple TV and some of these other streaming services potentially getting into the mix. But if you look at the tech companies like an Amazon or Apple TV, you know, I think they're more looking at items and live streaming that can potentially be global. I think TSN intimately understands how Canadian the Canadian Football League is. and also understands that, you know, outside of the United States of America, it's not like there's a huge clamoring for this content. So for TSN, it has a lot of value because it's literally the only other sport in the summer that can come close to competing with the Blue Jays or have a chance to overtake them. Like last year when the Jays had a down season, CFL games were consistently beating Blue Jays telecasts on their main competitor in Sportsnet.
I think this timing is fantastic for Johnston. And the reason I say that is because I think there was at least some appetite. I'm speculating, but I think there was at least some appetite for TSN to win the NHL rights back, even if it was just in part from Rogers. That obviously didn't happen. And Rogers now has the exclusive national rights to NHL games through 2038. That is a long, long time. And not only that, but it was reported earlier this year that TSN is being put up for sale. And there was speculation around MLSE and that sale that was done from Bell to Rogers, that Bell could even be leaving or at least declining its role in the Canadian sports media market. Now, for what it's worth, Bell denied that TSN is for sale. But sometimes, right, where there's smoke, there is fire. We don't know. So if I'm Johnston, and I've ridden this wave at TSN of regional hockey and CFL, et cetera, and now you're getting the opportunity once it's like, okay. And by the way, Stuart Johnston is a 57-year-old man. Like by the time TSN
54.
Has 54 – sorry, you're right. He's a 54-year-old man. Regardless, by the time TSN has an opportunity to bid for these national rights again, he's going to be darn near 70. So that ship has probably sailed. Right. So for Johnston to make the leap right now, I think this is a good time, especially if TSN is sold. Nobody knows where TSN could end up if, in fact, it is sold. And everybody, as we know, anything is for sale for the right price. I don't care what anybody says. Queen Elizabeth II is for sale if somebody's willing to pony up the right amount of money. Right. It doesn't matter. So for Johnston, I think the timing of this makes a lot of sense. As for the TV deal, I agree, Justin. From an educated guess standpoint, I would suggest that a re-up with TSN is most likely. Interestingly, the last time the CFL re-upped its exclusive national rights with TSN, that was done over 2 years in advance of the future expiration of the next deal. Right now, we're already 21 months away from the expiration of that deal. So we are further to the expiration this time than we were the last time that this deal got redone. So Johnston presumably has all kinds of inside information about exactly how much money TSN profits off of the Canadian Football League and its broadcast, which, by the way, a figure TSN has never formally confirmed but is believed to be true, is in and around $50 million a year. If 12 years ago the CFL's rights were worth in and around $40 million, which is reportedly what TSN was paying at that time, one would think they're now worth 80 or 90, given the way that hockey's rights went up. But of course, if you're going to get a premium for that rights deal, you need multiple bidders if you're the CFL. And it's possible, you mentioned some of the giant conglomerate, bloated multinational corporations who have been getting their toes into the sports media world, Justin. It's possible that behind closed doors, some of those went to TSN and said, hey, we want to buy a game from you. We want to license the playoffs from you this year. Obviously, none of that came to fruition, but it's possible that Johnston has had closed door meetings with those types of groups and has some idea as to the landscape. Regardless, I just hope that Johnston does a better job as commissioner than the last TV guy who was hired, who, of course, was Jeffrey Orridge, a guy who lasted only 2 years on the job and was obviously not the right hire for that position as he was pushed out so quickly. So good luck to Stuart Johnston. I wish you all the best, and I know you're either going to listen to this show or you're going to get a report on the notes from this show. So I want it on the record. I want it on the record. And this isn't just a three-down thing. I've had this conversation with other members of the media. The reason that we will criticize is because we give a damn about this league and we want to see it do well, and we care about the way in which it is woven into the social fabric of our country. So we will bang on you, just like we've banged on Randy Ambrosi or his predecessors. But we do it out of love and respect for what the commissionership of this league represents. So be prepared to bring it, because if you don't, We will say that.
I think that's a salient point that you bring up regarding Jeffrey Orridge. But even with that stated, I'm cautiously optimistic about this hiring for a lot of the reasons that both of you guys have already mentioned. When you're talking about the CFL's media rights going forward, there was only two ways that they were going to get significantly more money or a better deal than what they currently have, in my mind. And that was either there are multiple bidders and competition, which I've always been skeptical about. I know the arguments for the streaming giants that you guys have alluded to, but I think the history has shown that that has not necessarily been successful for some of those streamers when they go to smaller leagues. The MLS on Apple TV has got the power of Lionel Messi behind it and largely has been criticized for the way that deal has been handled. I think they would be completely inept when handling something like broadcasting the CFL, and you might actually lose viewership because less people have access to it. I think that would be a real risk there. So I didn't ever believe that they were going to be a realistic bidder. And clearly Sportsnet was never going to be a realistic bidder. So that leaves you only with TSN. So the only other option to better your deal and get more money down the road was to get closer in bed with TSN. And there is nothing that does that more effectively than hiring their president to be your commissioner. The connections, the business relationships, everything from that building to the CFL office will now be completely in tandem. I think he will understand what TSN can pay, what's reasonable for TSN to pay, and they can get this deal done quickly and effectively to the benefit of both parties. That, to me, is a really strong sign for the future of the CFL. And yes, maybe it won't be the maximum jaw-dropping deal that anyone can get, but ultimately, this is a niche product that has to operate within its proper space and maintain itself in a way that in a changing media landscape, when there are rumors about Bell divesting from sports, they're also not pricing themselves out of the market and taking their product away from the eyes of viewers. I think it's really smart to look within TSN for somebody who knows how that relationship works to solidify the league going forward.
There's so many different directions we can go here, guys, but you know, let's talk about this CFL broadcast rights deal, okay? Because fans on social media and that you talk to when you see them in person are saying, well, the CFL needs multiple bidders, as we've all alluded to already. Tell me who else is going to bid for the CFL rights. It doesn't seem like Amazon's banging the door down. They're testing out Monday Night Hockey, which they bought those rights from Rogers. Apple TV, yes, invested in Major League Soccer, but as JC alluded to, that's a league with not just international appeal. Canada has three teams in that league, and all the rest of the teams are in the U.S., but that has global appeal because of stars like Messi and David Beckham being involved in ownership there and on down the list. So tell me who else in Canada is going to bid for the broadcast rights, with all due respect, because there are no other national networks with that kind of money. It ain't going to be CBC as much as people would like to see it. Okay, so there are, from what I know at least, not any other networks. You look at how it can be beneficial to TSN also. There's the CRTC agreement. You have to have a certain amount of Canadian content that you produce. Now, the CFL goes far and above that, but it has that value to TSN and Bell Media. Then you look at the value that it has from a Bell Media perspective, and Bell specifically, where you can promote your products, internet, cell phones, the rest, to those people that you're bringing into the broadcast. So yes, you're paying this money that's in and around $50 million, and we're talking about a potential lift there on the new deal, but it has other inherent values for TSN. So I'll politely say to CFL fans, who are the other bidders? Like, let me know. I'm happy to be proven wrong, but when you talk to people in the industry that have been in it for a long time and that understand the inner workings, They can't point to anybody else unless there's some angel investor out there that wants to start a new television network. That could be a possibility, but it's a long shot. You know, some people will say, okay, look at what happened in the United States with FanDuel purchasing a bunch of regional networks that essentially were going to declare bankruptcy. Yes, that happened. Is FanDuel willing to do that in Canada, you know, just for CFL rights? Well, perhaps, and there's some people that have speculated behind the scenes, but I don't get the sense that that's close to happening because the juice just isn't quite worth the squeeze because the Canadian market isn't as anywhere near as big as the American market is.
To me, I think, you know, there could be an argument made that Rogers could potentially look and say, hey, if we want to own the summer, we can put the Jays up on one channel, we can put the CFL up on another feed, and we can crush our competition. Well, the flip side of that conversation is Rogers just spent like $15 billion acquiring sports properties in Canada through MLSE and re-upping these NHL rights. So I don't think Rogers is sitting there going, wow, we're flush with cash. We have all these opportunities, right? And the synergy that Rogers has built by owning not only the Jays and not only the building the Jays play in, but also the network on which the Jays play, I think is something they probably don't want to disrupt. So I see what you're saying, Justin. There's not a ton of opportunity, I don't think, for the CFL to attract a slew of realistic bids on his rights. And the other thing I will say, and I know to some extent, fairly, people will criticize TSN or maybe some bells and whistles that are missing from its broadcast certain weeks, whatever. But I also know that CFL fans, the second they actually had to go from TSN to Sportsnet to like figure out where the game is on,
or TSN to CTV.
TSN to CTV, or TSN to CBC, or TSN to Amazon Prime, or TSL to Apple. You know what I'm saying? The second they had to actually look at the schedule and go, wait, where the heck is the game? I don't just turn on the same channel. We all know that the complaints on social media would be like to the nth degree. So I appreciate that fans might want change. On the other hand, sometimes you don't know what you got till it's gone. Just like the CFL won't know what they could have had in me as their commissioner. No, I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding. I'm not actually a candidate.
We hear all the time from fans complaining when they travel to the States. They're like, where's the CFL game on? Well, for free on your laptop. They're like, I can't figure out how to do that. You think they're going to buy a subscription to GG.com's streaming service if the CFL was on there? Like, you are going to lose viewership.
Oh, come on. We all know that Kijiji streaming service would be called the Jeej. That's what it would be called. Watch the Jeej. You can watch 10-year-old reruns of The Good Wife and CFL football for $4.99 a month. It's the Jeej. And you can only stream it on Fire Sticks created, manufactured from 2015 to 2021. Anything other than that, you can't find the Jeej. That's what watching content is like these days as a consumer. It's ridiculous.
You open yourself up to all sorts of challenges. And to your point, Dunk, streamers have been interested in other leagues because of global appeal, like the MLS. But by all accounts, the MLS's viewership on Apple TV has been atrocious for their championship game. Just downhill across the board. Like, it has not been a success in terms of driving eyeballs to that league. Now, is there advertising benefit from Apple's perspective and from the MLS's perspective? Even sure. But it has not translated into a broader appeal for that game. And I think part of it is because even though the world is going more towards a disconnected media landscape where people are cord cutting and moving away from traditional broadcast TV, it still has power. It's still the most effective way to get your product in front of the most eyeballs, because everything else is spread out over a landscape with 6,000 different options that nobody has access to every single one of them. I think you need to be on network TV if you are a serious league who is interested in growing its product.
It's simple, guys. Network television, broadcast TV, whatever you want to say, is still where the majority of people go, at least in this country, to watch the Canadian Football League and generally other sports. Like, that's why the NHL is re-upping with Rogers Sportsnet, is because that's where the majority of people watch. Is streaming increasing? Yes, there's no doubt about it. But the key here for TSN and the league, if this next broadcast deal comes to fruition or an extension is signed, is going to be, you know, how do you transition the broadcast over to streamers? Like, the television broadcast is what I'm getting at, over to streamers, which is what, you know, a lot of networks are trying to do, right? How do you make sure that that audience stays with you as the years go along? Because the younger generations have shown that, you know, they are not paying for cable. But then you look at the cost, as JC alluded to, of having multiple streaming networks, and it ends up being more than cable. Mm-hmm. So I think that's the delicate balance here. And Stuart Johnston will be arguably one of the best in our country at understanding those key nuances and how to find the most people, get it available to the most amount of observers in our country. So I'm going to withhold judgment until Johnston speaks and acts. But I think what Hodge said was well taken. And I'll nitpick a little bit, because Hodge said, we will criticize. Well, we criticized Randy Ambrosi when he did silly things like go to the government and ask for up to $150 million without a plan. Everybody criticized that. Perhaps Mr. Johnston, who seems to have, by all accounts, you know, you look at James Duthie's Twitter account and some of the other TSN personalities with an outpouring of support for him taking this role, that perhaps he's a little bit smarter than that, that he wouldn't do something like that, even if perhaps the Board of Governors put him up to it. So is he going to have missteps? I'm sure there's going to be some there. But this hiring, by all accounts, even if people don't know Mr. Johnston out there, they'll get to know him, and we have to judge it based on what he does, less about what he says, even though I think that's a key part to this, is public speaking and really sharing the vision for the league into the future, because that can be a real key for the league to potentially draw in any other bidders, if there's even any out there, for the league's broadcast rights.
Well, we're going to criticize because it's inevitable that he's not going to be perfect. If Stuart Johnston is literally perfect, then yes, I will vow that we will not criticize him.
What if he says that you should grow your hair back and you just don't like him for that?
I'll say this. I think that we should launch 3Down Nation streaming service right now. We can call it 3DN, and we can charge people $3 a month, and we'll have the podcast on there. We'll have Justin Dunk, University of Guelph quarterback highlights, and we'll have video, of me shaving my head in the mirror. And those are our three options. Video
of JC eating a Costco hot dog and chomping it down.
And then, if we are successful financially, we will use that equity to make a push for the CFL streaming rights. I think 2027 is probably too soon, but maybe by 2035. With a 3Down Nation streaming service at 3DN could make enough money to do that. Who knows?
Okay, I know we need to move on, fellas, and I've had this attempt to say this, but I just want to give a real world example. Okay, you guys know my involvement with Running Back Relentless, and without divulging too much, it's not like there are a bunch of companies that were out there knocking down the door to get that documentary on their streaming service or on their air. So, like, that's just one small real world example that Stuart Johnston will have much, way more vast experience in that realm. But people always talk about online too. Well, how come we don't see these documentaries like Drive to Survive? Well, one, Formula One makes like a crazy amount of money. Like, it's ridiculous. And they have the money to have cameras rolling 24/7 so that they can dice up the absolute best moments into, you know, approximately 1 hour shows that air in their seasons. And the other part of it, when people in the CFL world make this cry for more behind the scenes documentaries, is that, you know, I am hesitant to believe, you know, based on one experience, that demand is really there. The real key for the CFL is live events, and that's the games. That's where the biggest audience is outside of what we do daily on 3downnation.com, to be quite honest, fellas. Like, that's real, okay? Yeah. The biggest audience is when the games are on. Ideally, it grows in the future and people clamor for it and demand for more documentaries like Running Back Relentless and the rest, but it's not there yet. And I think Stuart Johnston will have a great idea of that and how to potentially get some of those things to air in a cost-efficient way.
Absolutely. And to that point, Don, people have voted largely with their clicks.
This year, experience the NHL playoffs your way. Want to watch a single? Do or Die Game 7, a full week of heavy-hitting back-and-forth series. Then check out Sling's 1-3 and 7-day passes. Watch The Chase for the Cup on ESPN and TNT, starting as low as $4.99. No long-term contracts or overpaying. Just live hockey at home or when you want it. Sling lets you do that. Visit sling.com to learn more.
Already, when it comes to that sort of content, because teams are producing it at this stage, right? There are a number of different internal documentaries, Arrow Up for the Lions, Behind the R for the Red Blacks, all across the league that do this type of content. And if you go on YouTube, and you go on wherever you can see those videos, the viewership numbers aren't crazy. They're respectable. I'm glad that the teams are doing it. I think it's a net positive, but they're certainly not banging down your door, this has to go mainstream type of numbers. And just even a recent example, it wasn't as big a story this year as it was 2 years ago, but the CFL Combine wasn't streamed again. And I saw a number of people complaining that it wasn't streamed. This is Bush League. How can it not be on TSN or whatever? Go back and look at the stream from the year previous. It had fewer viewers for that entire live stream than our live CFL draft show with myself and Ben Grant did last year. That's not good. That's not me pumping up my chest and saying we have a massively successful draft show. It's like it's a couple thousand viewers total for an event that people are criticizing the league for not investing, putting a full broadcast on. That takes money. So is it good to have those things? Should they continue to be produced? Absolutely. But there is not mass demand for it by any stretch of the imagination. And if you would like there to be, then watch the ones that are already happening, because clearly not enough people are, despite their complaints.
Let me add one thing really, really quickly here. This, however, is illustrating part of the downfall of Randy Ambrosi, which we've talked about, which was overpromising and underdelivering. I asked why the CFL post-COVID didn't bring back CFL Week, which was a very popular in-person event in Regina in 2017 and Winnipeg in 2018. And a high up in the CFL told me in quite clear terms, the issue with events like CFL Week is they just bring people back, like the same people who are CFL fans all the time, and we need a digital strategy to bring in new people. And Randy Ambrosi, in a separate interview, I believe went as far as to call the CFL a digital product. Like, we are a digital product, we're going digital, da da da. So when your commissioner on the one hand is touting your entire organization as a digital organization, you then have to follow that up by doing at least the basics of digital. And if you have internally decided, you know what, this is not worth the investment, let's not do this, then your primary messenger, who is the commissioner of the CFL, has to not call themselves a digital league or a digital product. That messaging does not at all even begin to match what was happening in practice. So I don't discredit the CFL for not streaming the combine. If the numbers aren't there, the numbers aren't there. But then the new commissioner, Mr. Johnston, has to do a better job of messaging clearly, because if he comes out and says, yeah, we're a digital league, baby, we're all digital all the time, and just you wait, and then nothing happens digitally for a year, then you've got egg on your face. And nobody should make any apologies for pointing that out.
It's simple, man. Under promise and over deliver. And that's why I say we will judge him based on his actions. I just want to touch on Running Back Relentless for one last time. It's still up on Apple TV, and I'll say that if people vote enough, with their clicks and with their wallets, then there's the potential for more of these documentaries. So, you know, it's one thing to complain about it online that they're not there, and JC laid it out well with what the teams have done. And ultimately, if you want more of it, and I'm talking to all the CFL fans out there, I know there's a lot of them, then you have to vote like this. I'm not saying that you should, but like, don't complain about it when the results just aren't there. I know that's not necessarily, you know, ideal and sort of the climate that we're in right now and some uncertainty. I won't even go off on that tangent, but that's kind of what I'm talking about. And Hodge, I think that's a great point about Randy Ambrosi. And that's why I feel like it's key for Stuart Johnston to be able to convey his message in a direct way and not overpromise and underdeliver. You know, if anything, say less, because your actions are going to say more. Mark Waitman stepped down as the president of the Montreal Alouettes after 2 years on the job. The team indicated he will not be replaced, with his duties falling to general manager Danny Maciocia, who will now also serve as the team's senior vice president of football operations and director of finance. Hodge, you're the French major. You want to say the name?
JC is the French guy. I would say René Masson, but yeah, that's probably
wrong. I think that is correct. René Masson.
Nicely done, buddy. He is the COO and CFO.
I believe it's she.
Oh,
I believe, sorry. Renee is a woman, but I could be wrong.
My bad, boys. Thanks for picking me up. How significant is this development in Montreal?
I think it's extremely significant. And I hope that in hindsight, I sound alarmist right now, because everything up to this point, the last 2 years under Pierre-Carl Péladeau, the intrepid owner of the Alouettes, I think has been pointing in the right direction. Right, we've had a ton of sellouts in the last year in Montreal. We had a Grey Cup championship in 2023. Things seem to finally be on the right track for a team that had been in two ownership crises in not a very long period of time. Like, we're talking 3 or 4 years, with, by the way, a global pandemic thrust into the middle of those two ownership crises. That being said, I am alarmed at the state of the Montreal Alouettes, and I thought that this press release was maybe the most shocking I've read in my time covering the CFL. Pierre-Carl Péladeau, who is reportedly worth over $2 billion, by the way, bought the team privately in 2023. It is not held through any of his corporate entities. It is his personally. Made it very clear that he did not expect to make money on the Alouettes, and even went as far as to insinuate he didn't care if they ever made money or how much money they lost. He was owning this as a point of Quebec pride. He was owning this as somebody who wanted to ensure that the local football team in Montreal, the Alouettes, would have a long-term secure future. And in what I believe was his only interview that he did in 2024, he reiterated this, saying, I don't care if I lose money. I am here as a point of pride. I'm here because I think that there's inherent value in this team. The press release that was sent out exactly a week ago today, last Wednesday, literally said that Maciocia and Masson will be tasked with returning the Alouettes to profitability. Which is like, hold on, we just talked about in the last segment, matching your messaging to your actions. The Alouettes, I do believe, were on track to, at the very least, break even. Like, they'd made meaningful progress in terms of how much money they'd been losing before Pierre-Carl Péladeau bought the team versus last season. Obviously, the big crowds would have helped with that. But to suddenly decide we're going to get rid of our president, and I do believe that that's what happened. The official story is that Mark Waitman stepped down, but Mark Waitman was notably absent during the press conference that followed this announcement. He was only on the job through March 28th. That was the Friday. This announcement came out late Wednesday, the day before, and he is not doing any media. Three Down Nation requested comment from him. He did not respond. So as far as I'm concerned, if Mark Waitman was leaving the Alouettes for a better opportunity, that would have been announced. He would have spoken at the press conference, and they would be in the process of hiring or anointing a new president. They are not hiring a president. That, to me, is crazy. And what I suspect has happened is Pierre-Carl Péladeau got the financials from 2024 and went, holy crap, I don't want to keep losing money, especially perhaps with the way in which the global economic structure is set right now. That might be an added concern from a year ago, in fairness to him. But he has gone as far as to say, well, I'm not paying a president. Because Danny Machocha, by the way, indicated in his availability that he didn't learn of this change until Tuesday. And he also said that he's not getting a raise to take on these extra responsibilities. So it certainly seems like Pierre-Carl Péladeau is trying to find the money in the organization that he wants to save. And I've also had a source tell me that the Montreal Alouettes equipment staff wanted to travel to the same conference they always have this offseason and were told there's no money for it. So there are other murmurings in that organization of frugality that has started to set in. And again, for a person who has consistently on the record said, I'm not in this to make money, I'm comfortable losing some money, it is shocking to suddenly turn 180 degrees and remove someone who, by all accounts, is a very well-respected executive and not replace them. Like, how, like, you want to be profitable, but you don't have a president? Who's running this team? That I have big questions about what's happening in Montreal, and I don't think that this is a positive development whatsoever.
I think you're absolutely right to be concerned, Hodge, because this is a concerning development. I think it was Herb Zurkowski from the Montreal Gazette who wrote this week that it looked like a situation where Waitman jumped before being pushed. I'll go a step further. It looks like a situation where he was pushed and then somebody on the top of the cliff said, look, he jumped. Like, this, by all intents and purposes, seems like an organizational decision to have him resign to save face, but to push him out as a cost-saving measure. And Waitman has always been very clear in his public commentary that he had a long-term plan for the Alouettes to become profitable, that he was marching towards that goal. And there have been a ton of positive signs, as you have laid out, Hodge, that he was going in that direction. Sellouts at Percival Molson Stadium, progress in terms of that team getting a foothold back in the Montreal marketplace. Even the success on the field, I think, can't be dismissed as a part of that whole equation. And Waitman, I believe it was last year, said he was halfway there, halfway to where he wanted to go, that his plan was not fully complete, but they had made that progress. To push him out when you are halfway to a goal of supposed stability and profitability, I think is a massive mistake by Pierre-Carl Péladeau. The criticism of him when he took ownership of the Alouettes was always that he had been somewhat of a mercurial figure in Quebec in business, that he was known to pop off at times and sometimes do some erratic things in his business dealings and in his personal life. I think we may be seeing that here, where he has simply lost patience with a president and is now making a rash decision to save money.
This is pure speculation, fellows, but another item that Pierre-Carl Péladeau has gone on the record about is wanting to have the rights with Videotron, aka TVA Sports. Is this Péladeau in some form or fashion showing his displeasure with the direction it looks like those broadcast rights could go? That is absolutely pure speculation, but when you listen, watch, or read the quotes from Danny Machocha, like, the guy gets a phone call, the move is made, he's not getting a raise, and he has been given no details about how the finances are going to be, I shouldn't say allotted, but looked after moving forward. And add to that, the next day, Danny Machocha pens a letter to Mark Waitman, calling him his good friend. Like, make it make sense, Montreal, because it doesn't. And the one thing that I want to say as nicely as possible here, fellas, is, like, just stop lying to us. And when I say us, I'm talking about CFL fans and, in this instance, the Alouettes fans. Because if you're penning a letter about how great Mark Waitman is, and then you get asked about what's happened here or where he might go next, and you say you don't know, either you're a terrible friend and you're just trying to win the public relations battle, or you're flat out lying to us and your nose is growing like Pinocchio. Like, stop it. And it's not just Danny Machocha. I'm sick of this from people around the league. And it even goes back a little bit. And I'm not saying Randy Ambrosi outwardly lied. But when you are open and honest with people, that brings in more people to your community. That's going to mean more dollars for a team or a league. Okay? I'm absolutely sick of the lies that people say on the record. That is why here at 3downnation.com, we call balls and strikes. So I am calling an absolute whiff here and a strikeout by Danny Machocha. Was saying he doesn't know where his good friend Mark Waitman is after going, where he's going, even after he penned a letter about him. Like, just don't say anything at all. It's disrespect to all the media that show up and cover this announcement. It's clear to me that Danny Machocha was sent out there to fail. Mm-hmm. I'll give him that.
Yep.
Because he couldn't answer any of the questions. But let's stop the lies, okay? Because we're not stupid, and the CFL fans, most importantly, are not stupid. Enough of it, CFL people across the board. I'm so sick of it, man. Like, just thinking of it makes my blood boil. I believe that we do a fairly good job. Are we perfect? Hell no. But a fairly good job of being balanced on this site that covers the Canadian Football League every single day. No other independent publication in this country can say that. Okay? We have put our effort where our mouths are. And dare I say that we don't make promises, we just simply deliver to our faithful readers who trust us to call those balls and strikes. So it's touched a nerve and it's kind of just come up, you know, as I'm talking about it, but I'm completely sick of it. Stop the lies. Stop disrespecting your fans who have supported your teams in this league for years and years and years with their hard-earned dollars.
And it should be noted that the Alouettes did not make Massant or Pierre-Carl Péladeau or his representative on the Board of Governors available. It was just Danny Machocha thrown into the situation, like, what was it, 36 hours after he learned about it, which is
deer
unfortunate. I feel bad for him.
That's what he looked
Yeah,
like.
That it's was during and we had a and we did have and Pablo Herrera Vargara, we should say, wrote a very nice column off of the situation for 3Down Nation. He was there at the availability in person. Wild situation going on in the Belle Provence. The BC Lions were officially stripped of their first and second round picks in the 2025 CFL draft after violating the salary cap by just under $350,000, marking the first time in league history that a team forfeited multiple picks. Toronto, Saskatchewan, and Ottawa also went over the cap, though not enough to trigger the loss of a draft pick. As previously reported by 3Down Nation, the forfeited selections have been awarded to the team with the highest waiver priority, which in this case is the Calgary Stampeders, and moved to the end of the corresponding round. As such, Calgary is now has picks 1, 8, 17, and 20 overall in this year's draft. JC, what does this mean for the Lions?
It means that even by their own adjusted benchmark for a team that intentionally went over the salary cap and knew that they were going to be punished for it, the Lions went further than even they had hoped, right? This was a team that knew in order to get Nathan Rourke and Matthew Betts back in the building to get a leg up on ensuring that they were Lions long-term, that they were probably going to lose a first-round pick. But my understanding of it is that they hoped that they wouldn't lose that second-round pick that was not in the plans, and they hoped they wouldn't get into the tier of punishment over $300,000, where it's now a triple the amount over fine, to keep it under $500,000 to maintain that second round pick. They failed to do that. They went over even by their own estimations, which to me, as much as you can say, if this were a trade, would you give this up to get Rourke and Betts? Yeah, you probably would. Would you do it again? Probably. I still think this was mismanaged. I think there were better ways to go about this where you're not losing so much draft capital and you are not paying a fine which, when it's all said and done, will amount to $643,000, $643,667, to be exactly precise, in fines paid by the Lions, all of which, I should note, go directly to helping their competitors and the Calgary Stampeders more than most. I think they will grow, ultimately, to regret this to some extent. Nathan Rourke, if he goes out there and he looks like he did in 2022, is going to expunge a lot of the hurt. But if either of these draft picks turn into anybody, or down the line we get a situation where Amar Doman isn't exactly thrilled about the money he's losing on the Lions, we will look back on this moment and say, was there a way they could have done it better?
It's just pocket change for Amar Doman. Come on, man. The draft picks, that's one thing. I'll give you that. Let's see what they turn into. But I think this is great, man. Who cares if teams go over the salary cap? It's more money for the players. These players deserve it. I have no issue with it. And, you know, I think back to 2013 when the Saskatchewan Roughriders went over the salary cap when general manager Brendan Tamman was there at the time, and people were freaking out. Well, hey, at least the Riders won the cup, and they did not go over the salary cap by over $300,000 and lose multiple draft picks, okay? I really got no issue with it because, in a way, fellas, feel free to agree or disagree, there kind of really isn't a salary cap now because the marketing cap is uncapped.
Well, if that were true, why'd you go over it then?
Over what, the salary cap?
Right. If there really isn't a salary cap and you can spend whatever you want on marketing money, which theoretically you can, then why did you go over the salary cap? Right. If you're going to make that argument.
Great point.
You can't say that there shouldn't have been any punishment at all. It should have all been marketing money.
I'm not saying that there shouldn't have been punishment, but I'm kind of just saying, like, you know, is there really a salary cap? You know, I guess to some degree, I'm not saying that.
My point is, if you could have put it all into marketing money, theoretically, and avoided this penalty, then why didn't you, right? Like, there are other ways that you could have saved yourself here, in my opinion.
You should ask this question.
That's a good question.
Yeah.
The other thing,
Ryan Rigmaiden or Neil McAvoy.
The next time I have them available, I absolutely will.
Great idea. Born on the podcast, fellas.
Keep in mind, the league does supposedly audit the marketing money. And if a player doesn't do the appearances or whatever else, the supposed way in which that is handled is the league simply converts it into normal spending. Right. So theoretically, if you sign a player for $100,000 off the cap and $400,000 off the cap, if you don't do any of the work to earn that $400,000, it simply goes against the salary cap at a rate of $500,000. Theoretically. But this is a very much gray area, feeling out, not really sure what's going on type of thing from the sources I've been able to speak to. Because on the one hand, you know, the traditional way in which you earn marketing money is you get paid a few hundred dollars to go and read to kids at a school or something like that. But with this new age that we're in, some players and their agents will argue, well, but if I record a 30-second video for my Instagram feed telling people to come to the game on Saturday, there's lots of influencers who get paid thousands of dollars to do that. Shouldn't I get to charge thousands of dollars of marketing money to do that? If you have a large Instagram following, I think that's a perfectly fair question. So it's definitely a gray area.
And on that note, it's worth pointing out that Nathan Rourke, who is not a big social media guy, has started a TikTok account where he's creating videos about his training and talking about the various things he does in the off season. I don't mean to be a pessimist, but I don't think that's a coincidence when you're getting paid a boatload of marketing money. And theoretically, that's supposed to count that somebody might start a social media account geared towards covering some of that money.
I don't think that's pessimist. I think that's just connecting dots. The only thing I will say, we should get to the Hodges Heritage moment, but the only thing I will add is that this rule, I appreciate that we don't want to lose draft picks because I do think that we should still have a full draft slate whenever possible, but it's ridiculous that Calgary's gotten a first and second round pick. Yes, they were moved to the end of the corresponding rounds, but it shouldn't be that one team is rewarded for another team forfeiting picks. Simple fix. Mm-hmm. Award the picks to the team with the highest waiver priority, but move them to the eighth round. So Calgary gets an extra eight. And if a second pick is forfeited, give it to Hamilton. They're the second highest waiver priority. I think that's a good way to handle it. You still got the same number of picks, but more of them are later in the draft. Because Calgary getting 8 and 17 and extra monthly distributions from the CFL to the tune of about 180K. Great day for the Stampeders. I'd argue maybe not super fair to the rest of the league. Hodges Heritage Moment. On this day in 2019, Fred Stamps signed a one-day contract with Edmonton to officially retire as a member of the team. The four-time CFL All-Star caught 496 passes for 7,932 yards and 49 touchdowns with the team and was twice named Edmonton's nominee for Most Outstanding Player. Stamps might be the only guy in CFL history to bear the name of his team's most hated rival. It always made me laugh that Fred Stamps was, for a time, the most hated player in Calgary, which I think is greatly ironic. Has there ever been a situation like this in pro sports? Like, I don't think there's ever been a guy, for example, who the Bears hated, whose last name was Bear. Like, I don't think that's ever happened.
I mean, Reiger is both a first and last name for some people. Surely the Bombers have had a player named Reiger at some point.
I don't think a last name, though.
We have to
maybe a first at some point.
We got to go through the history books and figure this out. I think this is a question we could answer.
I think the answer is no, but I'd be happy to do some of the research.
Let's go to the three-minute drill. Blue Bombers long snapper Mike Benson has been elected as the CFLPA's third vice president. Is he a fit for the role?
He is. Benson is a smart guy, and he's been in the CFL forever. I think he's very much qualified for this position. Canadian receiver Jeremy Murphy has retired from the CFL not long after signing with the Ottawa Redblacks. Is that a big loss for the team?
It's a loss in terms of their depth, because right now behind Nick Mardner, they only have undrafted free agent Darius Simons as the only other Canadian receiver on the roster. Guess where Ottawa is going to be looking in this upcoming CFL draft, which is not deep at the receiver position. University of Saskatchewan linebacker Seth Hundeby told Three Down Nation that he didn't grow up watching much CFL or even NFL. How is he not a Riders fan?
It's a fair question, but there's some guys like this that they're so into football that when they're not doing football or football-related things, that they just want to get away. So it doesn't necessarily surprise me. The Saskatchewan Roughriders have signed all CFL offensive lineman Logan Ferlin to a contract extension through 2027. Is that a smart move by Jeremy O'Day?
I mean, the guy can play center, guard, or tackle. He's 27 years old. He's from Saskatchewan. If there's anybody worth $250,000 to $265,000, which is what he's going to make, by the way, respectively, in 2026 and 2027, it's him. He also has $100,000 of the last year of that deal, guaranteed. The CFLPA stated that this year's salary cap isn't set in stone. How the heck is that even possible?
It's possible because technically they're allowed to apply the money to things like pensions or direct compensation for the preseason or postseason. But the reality is this whole thing has been bungled. If you are going to apply it somewhere other than the salary cap, why the hell did either the league and the PA, they both announced it as a salary cap increase? That makes no sense. This was a horrid, horrid mistake by both parties. Dunk, you reported the Saskatchewan Roughriders have had direct communication with Canadian receiver Chase Claypool of NFL fame. Could we see him in Rigerville anytime soon?
That depends on your definition of soon. I don't think it will happen for my definition of soon. And you talk to people around the league and they don't think that there's a chance that Claypool will come up here. I think he's made in and around $8 million USD while playing in the NFL. But the fact that he's had communication tells me that there's a chance, boys. There's a chance. Retired offensive lineman Theron Churchill has become the offensive line coach for the Edmonton Huskies in the Canadian Junior Football League. Do you like the hire?
I do. Churchill didn't pan out super well at the CFL level, but this is exactly the type of stewardship that so many guys have after their career. He's taken the knowledge that he learned at the CJFL level, U Sport level, Canadian Football League level, and is passing it on to the next generation. We love to see it. Last up, Canadian defensive lineman Mufta Ajeli did 33 reps of 225 pounds on the bench press at Eastern Michigan's Pro Day. Is that a great number?
It is a great number, but it was almost disappointing because Ajeli at last year's East-West Bowl put up 40 reps on the bench. So he's got more in him. Looks like he's got a little bit of weight, which should be good for his pro prospects, but you'd like him to be a little bit more athletic if he was truly a top-tier CFL draft prospect.
Fellas, we got through the whole episode, and you didn't even realize I was wearing a different shirt today. I usually go with a classic quarter zip, but we had some commenter on YouTube ask me to wear a new shirt. So we try to take in what the people are saying and, yeah, aim to please them.
I like how you went from a tight white quarter zip to a tight, very light gray hoodie. That looks almost the exact same, but it's technically different. So you're right. You fit the mandate. For Justin Doug and JC Abbott, I'm John Hodge. Please remember to subscribe to our new streaming service, Three Down Nation, where we'll have U Sport highlights and videos of me shaving my head and those types of things. And we'll see you next time.